So that was Interact, and that was a reprise of the overture from the beginning of the album, and the music is similar, but again, as I was talking about as far as the fanfare, it's a different orchestration. This time it's all electronic voices, is with the addition, with the inclusion of some vocoder sounds. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to do and really think turned out very well, especially with pieces like the fanfare and the overture that you can hear a couple of times and see the and really hear the differences in the way they things sound because of the different instrumentation. And in this case, I think it really gives off a very otherworldly mood, more than it did with the string arrangement, the overture. So right here is this is probably the best example of Kubrick using sound effects and using a very minimalist philosophy as far as filmmaking to really create a very suspenseful sequence. There's not much movement. There's not much in the way of dialogue. There's not much in the way of... there's no music, which other filmmakers would not do. I mean, they'd have the composer write a very exciting, very dramatic piece of music to go over this to really drive the point home. But Kubrick goes for a more minimalist approach, and the sound effects really enhance the tension and really add to the tension. Again, he doesn't insist on anything. He just presents the film as he wants to present it. And especially when Dave goes to rescue Frank, the way he uses, the way Kubrick uses the beeping on the transmitter to hone in on Frank, as in, it's very much very much the thing that really drives the suspense of the scene. And the, you know, the, and the closer that you get to Frank, the more you realize that this is basically a mission to, you know, bring his body back, as opposed to trying to revive him and rescue him. But it's one of the best sequences in the movie, precisely for that reason. And just this entire sequence after the intermission and before the trip through Jupiter's space really is Kubrick at his best and its boldest. Few filmmakers are really capable of doing this type of sequence and pulling it off. I think Tarkovsky is another example of a filmmaker who could pull this off, I think, and did in several of his films like Stalker and Solaris and Andrei Rublev. Kurosawa is another one. Basically, a lot of the great masters of cinema. unfortunately, because of how minimalist Kubrick's approach is in this entire film, it's sometimes very difficult to talk about the film other than what I've already discussed as far as the music and the sound effects. The performances are effective in the way that Kubrick seems to prefer performances to be, which is they're not really, you can tell they're very much acting. He doesn't necessarily go for realism and go for believability. He uses actors in much the same way he uses technical effects to serve his vision of the story. And I mean, that's not, you know, it's not meant to be a criticism of the performances in 2001, but just in showing, in acknowledging the way in which they fit in the overall fabric of the film. Douglas Rain, in particular, is the voice of Hal, is a great example of that. And, you know, as opposed, and it's ironic that he's got the most expressive voice, even though it's very much a monotonous voice, and the sound, it's at the same time very expressive. And Hal becomes the most compelling and the audience's favorite character to follow, even though he's basically trying to kill off the crew when he feels like the crew is in danger of ruining the mission, which is all that Hal is really programmed to care about. Excuse me. I haven't mentioned yet the Arthur C. Clarke short story The Sentinel, which was the sort of the acorn that grew into 2001. I actually took the chance to read it several years ago, and it's really a beautiful story. It's really an evocative story, and you can definitely see what attracted Kubrick to the idea of using that as a launching point for 2001. I've never actually read the novelization of 2001 he and Arthur C. Clarke wrote, but it's something I've been very curious to maybe read sometime in the future. And it's, you know, it was sort of funny in the fact that, you know, sort of the same way The Sentinel was the basis for 2001, my piece Beyond the Infinite ended up inspiring the album of the same name, which actually is Beyond the Infinite, a musical odyssey, and just to drive the point home that this is inspired by 2001. This is another great use of sound effects to really help tell the story. You have the malfunction sound signal, and then you see on the screen, you see all of the different lifelines flatlining until finally it gets the sound gets bigger and bigger and faster, and then when you see everything flatline, the sound goes away. And it really is another case of Kubrick really driving the point home and trusting the audience's intelligence to figure it out for themselves. what's going on. And it's he was really one of the great ones as far as visual storytelling and just using visuals to tell a story better than dialogue would have been able to. One of the I was at Georgia State. I studied primarily music industry sound recording, but I also had a healthy interest in composing even at that time. And really, I always was more interested in becoming a composer than I was working a recording studio. It just interested me more on a creative standpoint, and it's. You know, it's something that I still do to this day. And I mean, this is Beyond the Infinite's actually the fourth album that I've, that I'm releasing after, three others. And obviously, I don't know why I said that, but anyway, one of the things that, I had to do in one of my recording classes was create an audio scene, which was basically an editing project that required us to use sound effects to paint a picture in a way. And, I was having a hard time with it and was not really sure what I wanted to do. And I talked to my instructor. I talked to my professor about it, and he gave me the idea of doing a Western. Nobody had really done a Western before, and that really struck an idea in my head, and I ended up creating this sort of Western narrative, and I had a backstory to it, and I had everything. One of the things that I used to... for the audio scene was actually some of Howl's dialogue as it's featured on the 2001 soundtrack. And people who have the soundtrack know that the entire last track is just like 9 minutes of Howl dialogue and Howl interaction with the crew. And so I basically used some of that dialogue, some of Howl's dialogue for the audio scene, as well as I ended up getting albums of Ennio Morricone's Spaghetti Western music. I used clips from like Jackie Brown and Pulp Fiction and stuff like that, which has a lot of dialogue as well. And I actually was able to create a pretty funny audio scene. Everybody really seemed to enjoy it. And, It's still one of my favorite things that I was able to actually accomplish from a creative standpoint, and it's really a lot of fun to listen to. So it's in retrospect, it's actually kind of ironic that I would do a Western because of the fact that my third album, Sonic Visions of a New Old West, was inspired by the music of Ennio Morricone and had another... very much had a Western motif itself. So that was pretty fortuitous. just one great scene after another in this film. Unfortunately, it doesn't really allow for much to say other than just trying to explain what's happening on screen, which is always kind of a pointless use of audio commentaries. But I love this scene where where Hal is basically locked out Bowman, and he has to try to go through an emergency airlock in order to get back into the ship, but he has to do it without his helmet. And it's another great example of the way Kubrick uses sound effects, and or the lack of sound effects more appropriately, to help tell the story and help drive the narrative home. And I think part of in 2001 is definitely one of the most influential films I've ever seen, probably the most influential art in general in my life. I think it's probably been more influential to me than anything else has, whether you're talking about movies, music, or whatever. I think it's really inspired me in a way to really challenge my own creativity with Beyond the Infinite, and to see if I could do something that I think could live up to the legacy that the film has achieved, which I think in creating Beyond the Infinite I was actually quite successful with. But also, just in general, it's really this type of storytelling using silence, not really, and a very minimalist philosophy towards creativity and art and whatever. I think that's really become infused in my own creative process. Most of the compositions that I write are very sparse as far as their instrumentation, usually around somewhere around 3 to 6 instruments typically used. So, I mean, it's not that big, and I rarely use percussion because usually when I'm recording it, I find that it sort of clutters up the sonic landscape. So, and when I mix pieces down, I also, try to put things in their own places, but in a way that gives off space, and also in a way that gives them their own specific places to breathe, in a matter of speaking. So that's something that's influential about this film too. I really do consider myself more of a storyteller than I do just a composer, just a filmmaker, just because of the fact that even whether it's creative writing, whether it's films that I want to make, whether it's music that I want to that I write, I always have a visual idea in it, and I sometimes even have a story that I want to tell. Not so much in Beyond the Infinite, which I've already discussed the things I wanted to accomplish in that, but also when other pieces that I've done, it's been more for the sake of telling specific stories, conveying specific emotions, and putting people in a particular mood that has really inspired me. And that's one of the things that I try doing in my own films, and I think in my own music, and it's something that I think I've been pretty successful at for the most part, and a lot of people who listen to my music tend to agree. So, I mean, I hope I hope that you take the chance to seek out some of my other pieces that are online at my main website, which is sonic-cinema.com. You can also find me on Facebook, as well as MySpace, and my music, my albums are primarily sold through CD Baby as well as places like iTunes. So, you know, now that I've gotten the plug out of the way, you know, I do hope you check out some of my other albums, and I hope it's inspired you to even check out some of my other commentaries as well. I've done several solo commentaries as well as several group commentaries with some friends of mine who I've also worked on films with. This is where Hal is really desperate and really, really actually very sad. And it's actually very sad for the audience, I think, to hear Hal like this because of the fact that he's been so confident and he's been so he's been so cool up until now that he's basically just trying to push Dave's buttons. And ironically, he's more human than Dave is now. Dave has a very central single purpose, which is primarily what Hal has had, but he seems to have lost all sense of his own humanity at this point. So it's interesting in the fact that that makes Hal the more sympathetic and, ironically, the more human character to watch now. The piece that's coming up after this, during the Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite sequence, is entitled Searching for the Mysteries, which was actually a title inspired by a friend of mine, Chrissy Magruder, who I had given tracks from the album to listen to, and but I didn't give her the titles, even though I already had them figured out. And she was so inspired by what she heard that she actually wrote her own titles for the album, for the tracks. And the one that she did for the piece coming up, which I'd originally called The Ultimate Trip, in homage to one of the critical blurbs I've seen about the film. The one she had for it was Searching for the Mysteries, and in the end I ended up using that because of the fact that it just seemed more appropriate and it was less on the nose when it came to 2001 in general. And it's a little more evocative, especially because this is a very experimental piece, and it's the longest one that I've ever created, and it uses a lot of different techniques from C-sound synthesis, in particular some C-sound drones that I had created for a different piece several years ago, but have co-opted for this one, and they sound like some of the music that Ligeti, from Ligeti's Atmosphere, so it was really appropriate to use that. And also the vocoder in the beginning and the end of the piece really get to work out as well as some different electronic sounds and percussive sounds, and from both my Yamaha keyboard as well as the Korg synthesizer vocoder. Coming up, and I will see you on the flip side, it is Searching for the Mysteries. So that was searching for the mysteries, and a lot of the vocoder effects at the end there, the last couple minutes. One of the things that I discovered in experimenting with the vocoder and just messing with it, and the first couple of times I try to pass it through, especially with using it on a mysterious lunar discovery, was the fact that if you listen closely in a mysterious lunar discovery when the vocoder is going, there are times where you can like hear a very constant beat playing, very soft, but at the same time it's very noticeable. That is actually I had the metronome on when I was recording the vocoder part so I could keep time with the piece in general, and it caught, and the microphone picked that up. So when I played it back, I noticed it, but at the same time, I really liked it because of the fact that it was really a very interesting sound. So when I was working on the vocoder effects for searching for the mysteries, it occurred to me that I could really play with the vocoder as opposed to just vocalizing it, which if you hear, I was sort of using the same idea that Kubrick used when he seemed to alter Ligeti's performances of adventures at the end and sort of have this laughing, mocking sound, just as if there were people watching Dave Bowman on like the other side of glass, like he was in a laboratory or something like that, which has been one of the ideas posed as far as what this last sequence entails. But I did a lot of different things. I tapped on it with my finger. I rubbed on it lightly with a conducting baton I had from Georgia State when I took a conducting class. And I did a lot of different things with it and really came up with some very interesting effects, which you heard in there. And it's one of the things that has made that piece so compelling for me to listen to, listening back to it. It really is another personal favorite. I mean, I love the album as a whole, and I'm very proud with the way that it ended up turning out. But that's just the way that I was able to use the vocoder and the way I was able to sort of use it in inspiration of what Kubrick did in 2001 and did with the music of Ligeti in this movie is just really been very rewarding for me and a lot of fun to do. So coming up here, we are going to come to the third and final presentation of the fanfare in A Place Among the Stars, which is recorded entirely with electronic sounds. It's the exact same music that you've heard before, but played electronically. And as I mentioned before, it's probably my favorite version of the fanfare. And that last piece was Angels Watching. It is sort of a finale to the album itself and sort of a culmination of a lot of the different musical elements that went playing. It's sort of how I feel like maybe I probably would have composed the original Beyond the Infinite piece now, as opposed to what I came up with 11 years ago, which I still enjoy. It's an interesting little electronica piece, but it's not really in keeping with a lot of the same styles and stylistic ideas that I do in most of my music now. But so that's pretty much it. One of the things that I wanted to, this idea for this commentary and this presentation of the music is something that I had in the back of my head a couple of years ago. I thought it might be a cool idea as a way to help promote the album, as well as to help me bring forth some of my ideas about 2001 in general, because it is a movie that I really love, and it's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's one of the best movies I've ever seen, and I really have wanted to share some of my thoughts on it beyond what I wrote about back in 2002 when I did my review of it. And so that's part of the reason that I wanted to do this commentary, and I'm very grateful that I'm able to present the album in context of the film that inspired it and the moments that inspired it in the film, and to just sort of give you an idea of what I was going for with the album. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed my sometimes stammering and sometimes a bit freewheeling thoughts. I tend to do these without really a whole lot of notes, so if, you know, any of the silences and stuff like that, that tends to be where those come from. But anyway, so I hope you enjoyed this, and my name again is Brian Scuttle. You can read my movie reviews, listen to some more of my commentaries, and listen to my music at www.sonic-cinema.com. That's my home webpage, and it's got a lot of cool stuff on there as far as different blogs that I do, movie reviews, which I've done several hundred, music, videos, and stuff like that. And there are a lot of other really entertaining commentaries that are available. So to leave you, I'm going to present one more piece. It's a piece that I've closed all my solo commentaries out with. It's and on the group commentaries, we call ourselves Yahoos with a Microphone. On my solo commentaries, I've taken to calling myself the Musical MC, the Musical Movie Critic. And what we have here is the Musical MC Finale. And so I hope you enjoy. Talk to you later.